Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Mike Tedder from the Church of St. Edward in Bloomington. Bloomington, out your way. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Let us pray. On this 39th Earth Day, we pray, how wonderful, O loving Creator, are the works of your hands. The heavens declare your glory, the northern lights display your handiwork. In your love, you have given us power to behold the beauty of your world robed in all its splendor. The sun and the stars, the prairies, the north woods, the sky-tinted waters of 10,000 lakes and rivers, all disclose your presence. The roaring breakers of Superior tell of your awesome might. The timber wolves and moose and buffalo, the birds of the air, bespeak your wondrous word. In your goodness, you have made us able to hear the music of the world. These voices reveal to us that you are in our midst. A divine voice sings through all creation. And we thank you for the visionaries who have been among us, Judge Magnee, Mary Gibbs, Sig Olson, Helen Hoover, the Native peoples. Help us to follow their example of being good stewards of this great gift. Bless all who guide our state in wisely using and enhancing our natural resources. We make our prayer in your holy names. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudre, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebretson, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. Senator Clark.
Mr. President, I move to recess to the call of the chair. Members, we're just waiting for the tax committee to all get up here. I know Senator Limmer is already here, but we're waiting for a few people to get done, and it shouldn't be too long.
On the motion to recess, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stand. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
Yeah, on the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We've got one message from the House, but I don't see Senator Saltzman in the chamber, so we'll jump over that. We'll go on to reports of committees. There's one to be read at the desk.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Taxes, to which was deferred Senate File Number 1276, a bill for an act related to transportation, appropriating money for transportation, Metropolitan Council, and public safety activities and programs, etc. Reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move the committee report just read be adapted. And are there some printed ones? And the ones in the agenda, printed in the agenda, also be adopted, with the exception of reports pertaining to appointments.
Okay, on that Pogamiller motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Then I'd move to lay the reports related to appointments on the table.
Okay, on the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There's one to be read.
Senate file 1276.
Was that referred to? Sorry. Second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business, second reading of House bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's introductions. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Under motions and resolutions, there's one author's motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now, if we are going to the calendar, again, just we're not going to be waiting for people on these bills today. And there's 10 of them. So the first bill on the calendar is Senate File 657. This is, she's not in the chambers. The second bill the author's not here. The third bill, Senate File 1288, it's a Senator Olsen bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
You have them. Senate file number 1288, a bill for an act relating to commerce, regulating various filings, forms, records, submissions, motions, and orders relating to duties and responsibilities of the Secretary of State, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be it 60 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Number 4 on the calendar, Senate File 1849. This is Senator Sparks' bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1849, a bill for an act relating to commerce, regulating consumer small loan lenders and residential mortgage originators and services, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators have been voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. The fifth bill on the calendar, House File 936. This is a Senator Sharon bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 936, a bill for an act relating to human services, specifying criteria for communities for a lifetime, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 58 ayes and two nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Number six on the calendar, Senate File 1711. This is Senator Dahl bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1711, a bill for an act relating to commerce, regulating motor vehicle sales and distribution.
Secretary will take the roll. Where is that? Senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary, Senator Higgins. Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and three nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Number seven on the calendar is Senate File 694. This is a Senator Berglund bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 694, a bill for an act relating to human services, modifying prenatal alcohol or drug use prevention appropriation.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes, zero nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Number eight on the calendar is House File 819. This is a Senator Latz bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 819, a bill for an act related to commerce, prohibiting certain unfair internet ticket sales by original sellers and resellers.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. Having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Number nine on the calendar is Senate File 1539. This is a Senator Gerlach bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1539, a bill for an act relating to insurance, regulating viatical settlements, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. And the other authors aren't here. Secretary, oh boy. All senators have voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator, that does it for the calendar. There's two authors are not here today. Staying under motions, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate.
Senator, just hold off just a little bit.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 1454, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, providing for a shared work plan, etc.
Okay.
Senate file number 1454 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Saltzman, description of the bill and what changes were made with the House.
Yes. And Mr. President, thank you very much. Senate file. Yes. So, Mr. President, I'd like to explain this bill. Senate file 1454 was passed in this body earlier, and the companion bill that it was following was not moving in the House. And so my language was amended onto another House file. And so the author in the House worked with the House so that the two files then became companion bills. So the language that has been sent back to us from the House only deletes one provision in the bill that we passed here in the Senate. This is the shared work bill. And shared work is a program that we've had in this state for a number of years, but this bill is providing greater flexibility so that businesses who potentially are laying off employees are able to use this program. So instead of laying off 10% of their workers, they are able to cut back hours 10% and use the unemployment insurance so that everybody keeps a job, so that no one loses a job. The provision that was taken out by the House was the first section, which was a purpose statement. And some people who are purists believe that we should not have purpose statements in our bill. In addition to that, there was one provision that was added, and this would make it retroactive. And Senator Dill, I don't know if you'd like to speak to this, but I know that this is a program that has been very important to a business in your community, and you've spoken to me in favor of this bill. And Representative Erdahl was the author in the House. So it's had an interesting path, but we have worked between the two bodies so that this bill could be passed.
Okay, a discussion on Senate File 1454. Secretary will give Senator Limmer the chance to talk. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Saltzman, you mentioned that your language was added to a House bill. And could you expand a little bit on what is in the House language that we did not know about when it left the Senate chamber?
What? Senator Saltzman.
Yes, Mr. President, and Senator Limmer. It is a delete-all amendment in that the language that is coming back to us is essentially the language that was sent to the House with the first section deleted, which was a purpose statement, and there was a date change so that the shared work program could be retroactive to January for those businesses that are using it now. And this was to address a business that is in Senator Dill's district that is already using this program. So it's coming back. It is essentially the same bill that you voted on earlier with the purpose statement deleted. So there are no other provisions in it.
Further discussion. Senator Saltzman.
Mr. President.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. President, members, Senator Salzman is right. This bill did originate with in my Senate district, but it has statewide significance. And it's a shared workers program, and I believe that there's a limit on how long you do a shared workers program. I think it's 1 year, and we're allowing it to go beyond that point so that rather than lay off workers, you have workers that are sharing the same job. They're just working fewer hours per week, and it keeps them eligible for certain government benefits by doing this. So I'm the chief author of the bill in the Senate, but it didn't go anywhere in the Senate. I guess I gave it to Senator Scheid. That's right. Senator Scheid chief authored, and I was a co-author. That's what happened. And somehow Senator Saltzman wound up with it. But at any rate, I'd urge your support for this bill.
Okay. Without Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, will Senator Saltzman yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, Senator Saltzman, I was looking at the effective dates and also the retroactive date to January 1, 2009, to which you referred. And I'm curious if we're making a provision for one to be retroactive, why this bill will not go into effect until August 2nd of this year. Why wouldn't it be brought? Why wouldn't it go into effect sooner than that if employers are looking to use this?
Senator Saltzman.
There. Thank you very much, Mr. President, and Senator Frederickson. This was what the language that we worked out with Deed, that, as Senator Dill said, that the bill that came from Representative Erdahl was a very limited shared work program specific to a business. And when he learned that we were working on a larger bill that would make this applicable to all businesses, I believe that the retroactive date would apply to this business and that it would be exempt from some of the requirements that are currently in the shared work program that requires people to renew every 6 months. It's limited. This will be broader. And Deed felt that they could implement this program because it is going to require some changes in how they review this. One of the problems that they were having and that they've been working on is that they were not set up, and they're trying to be much more flexible. So that is why the reason for having the August date.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Saltzman renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1454 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1454, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance providing for a shared work plan, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Porter-Miller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I'd move the Senate do now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Porter-Miller.
Mr. Chairman, there's a list on people's desks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Looks like about 12 bills, starting with number 25, and I would yield to Senator Rest.
First bill on general orders this afternoon will be number 25 on general orders, House File 878. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 878 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Est.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 878 is the Department of Transportation's housekeeping bill. It has not very many provisions in it at all. The first one is to allow MnDOT to record with the county a survey of an existing highway center line before the highway is moved or removed. Secondly, it removes the statutory requirement for local governments, counties or cities who receive money from the state park road account in the county state aid highway fund. That amount must reduce the county's or city's money needs. Also removes the statutory requirement that when a county receives a variance from rules or engineering standards, the variance must be reflected in estimated construction costs in determining the county's money needs. It also strikes some obsolete language. It removes another statutory requirement that when a city receives a variance from rules or engineering standards, it's the same kind of thing for cities as for counties in terms of reflecting the construction cost. And next, it gives some definitions by reference for expressway in the signs and billboards chapter of statutes, and it defines a freeway in the same way, the same sections of the statutes. Then it also clarifies existing prohibitions against advertising devices within 500 feet of an interstate highway interchange outside incorporated cities, and then it adds the state rail bank property to the authority of the Commissioner of Transportation to review it. There was no controversy with the bill.
Discussion on House File 878. Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 878 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill, number 39 on general orders, Senate File 457, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 457 be recommended to pass.
Higgins, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, last year I carried a bill that would allow our Medical Reserve Corps to be mobilized and given liability protections during an emergency or a disaster response. These were both issues that arose after the 35W bridge collapse and even Hurricane Katrina. Senate File 457 extends the same ability to practice as well as liability protection to volunteer health practitioners who are deployed under a plan or an agreement with a disaster organization, professional organization, healthcare facility or provider, or other person under the Interstate Emergency Management Assistance Compact. So basically, if they go to another state, they have the same protections. In committee, Senator Erickson Ropes shared with us that she went to New Orleans with a group of nurses after Hurricane Katrina to provide assistance, and many of the nurses came back home to Minnesota because there weren't these types of protections. This bill supports the important work that volunteer practitioners do during emergencies and disasters in our state, and with this bill, they'll be able to help out of state as well. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 457. Seeing none, Senator Higgins renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 457 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We're going to jump to number 115 on general orders, Senate File 926, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 926 be recommended to pass.
Okay, discussion on your bill, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a regular parity bill dealing with telecommunications. What the bill would do would eliminate outdated regulatory constraints on promotional offerings. The second part of the bill reduces regulation in business market, and that would be businesses with four lines or more. It would allow for flexibility in a competitive marketplace for larger business customers. I'd like to thank all the stakeholders who came together and did a lot of work on this. The consumers were of benefit, and it would level the playing field. There's no opposition to the bill, and I would urge member support.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Sparks renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 926 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Number 64 on general order, Senate File 477, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move when this committee do arise that Senate File 477 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl, a description of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am especially proud that today being Earth Day that I get to present this bill today. This is a paint stewardship bill. You did hear it, members, last year. This bill is really, it's designed to not only reduce the cost to taxpayers, but it's also a new way of reducing the burden on our environment through product stewardship. And this bill allows for a new model of collecting and disposing of post-consumer architectural paint, the paint we put on our walls and things like that, in Minnesota. The reason this legislation is before us is to allow manufacturers, distributors, and retailers to work together in a limited but specific manner to implement the program. Because competitors such as paint companies cannot meet without raising antitrust concerns, the paint industry, manufacturers, contractors, and interested parties need this legislation with a clear, ascertainable purpose. And such legislation like this fulfills the necessary state action that's needed to the requirements that companies may meet and discuss prices and sensitive market information. This is a unique program. It's groundbreaking. There is no one else doing it in the country. That's why this is a pilot program for the period of 3 years. Because Minnesota is the home to one of the most comprehensive paint collection programs in the country, we're also home to three major paint manufacturers. This state has been chosen as the site that we would kick this program off for the nation. And I want to remind you again, this is a pilot program to kind of work out some any kinks that it might have. Now, in a year when the counties are all looking for some relief from their expenses at the county level, what this bill will remove is some significant costs associated with the implementation of paint collection and disposal. It is estimated that this program will save counties across the state $5 to $6 million. Upon enactment of this legislation, what this bill does is it sets up a third-party nonprofit organization that would represent the manufacturers of architectural paint that's sold in this state retail, and will create a statewide pilot program for negotiating and executing agreements to collect, transport, and process post-consumer paint for the useful end life of the useful life management of this the product. It'll establish a funding mechanism that recovers but does not exceed the costs of the program and reduces the generation of post-consumer paint. It'll also make it more convenient for consumers to return paint as well as contractors, because you won't only have to return it to a countywide site that you reside in, but you could turn it into any of the sites across the state. We do expect that there'll be more collection sites, as retailers have indicated that they are interested in also becoming collection sites. This pilot program does call for some reports. It's part of the program as far as having state oversight. So on October 15th of 2010, there will be a report issued to the PCA commissioner who will be overseeing this program. And on January 15th of 2012, the legislature will receive a final report. This program would expire on June 30th, 2012. And at which point we could decide as a legislature whether to modify, continue, or discontinue the program. We do have widespread support for this program. Paint manufacturers, retailers, contractors. I even have a support of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association for this program, the Minnesota Paint Council. The manufacturers that we've received letters of support from include Valspar, Vogel, Sherwin-Williams, Benjamin Moore, the National Paint and Coatings Association, so the Minnesota Retailers Association supports this bill as well. It's a very sound bill. Members, I appreciate your support on it. I do have one amendment, Mr. Chair, the A50 amendment, to get it in the final shape that I need it.
Secretary will report the Dahl A50 amendment.
Senator Dahl moved to amend Senate File Number 477 as follows. Page 3, line 23, delete 2011 and insert 2012. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Dahl on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, thank you. The amendment simply changes the date from 2011 to 2012 for the report to the legislature. This program will, again, expire on June 30th, 2012, so we want that final report 6 months prior to that date. That will give the 2012 legislature time to review that report and decide what to do at that point.
We're on the amendment. All those on the amendment? All those in favor that it's the date change? Signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill. Now, Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Dahl, how does this bill differ now compared to the one that was vetoed by the governor last year?
Senator
Mr. Chair,
Dahl.
Senator Parasol, we've taken out some of the specific language on dollar amounts for last year. We put some caps and said that it would be a 40-cent cap, things like that, that would allow, you know, where we would stop the fee, the assessment in there. It was put in there for consumer protection, but it was considered that it would be the legislature shouldn't have any say in what that dollar amount should be. We're leaving this completely up to the associations, the manufacturer, the private industry, to decide what is a comfortable amount, not to exceed the costs of the program, but what they're able to, so they can still remain competitive on their pricing. That was the main change on there, because I think most of the discussion centered around whether or not we were having the issue was considered a double taxation issue because there was a price included in the container of paint. What this does is allows that will be the mechanism that's, I guess, the preferred method is that it's included in the product, the cost. And now what that'll do is alleviate that cost from being borne by the counties. Currently, household hazardous waste programs receive about $14 million from the state. So on the sales tax of your waste management bill, that money goes to the state. This about 30% of that goes into the general fund. The other 70% goes to the PCA. About $14 million of the $59 million that's collected each year goes back to the counties to cover all of their household hazardous waste programs. Doesn't cover nearly the amount that is necessary. So our property tax picks up the rest of that. What this will do is eliminate that cost for the paint portion of the household hazardous waste program, and then the county can decide how they would use their dollars then for any of the other programs that they are now responsible for.
Further discussion on Senate File 477, Senator Roebling.
Would the author yield?
He will yield, Senator Roebling.
Senator Dahl, I'm trying to figure this out. So we're going to have a representative organization from the paint companies decide how much of an assessment they should put on a gallon of paint. And does anybody else have authority? I mean, it's like a tax that we're authorizing them to levy, but we don't know what the amount will be. So how is this going to be handled? Then they're going to be required to remit it to the Department of Revenue, who then dispenses it to the counties, or I'm trying to track this all.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, the plan that the organization comes up with has to be submitted to the commissioner or the Pollution Control Agency to determine whether it's an acceptable program. And that would include part of the costs of the program. Now, the paint industry still wants to sell their paint. They're going to keep this as limited as possible so they can still sell their paint, because they'll be competing along the borders as well. This specifically says it's not to exceed the costs of the program. So they'll have to demonstrate what those costs are and why they justify what that price is. So they're doing it both internally on their ability to sell their paint, as well as providing it to the commissioner of the PCA for approval.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Dahl, would you yield for question?
He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. To understand this a little more, the county's programs that are now currently going on, are they going to go away, Senator Dahl? Are those county programs going to go away, the paint recycling programs? Is that potentially? And also, last year, I think it was a 40 cent. Is that what it was? Do you have any idea what that might be? I mean, is there any projections what that might be per gallon?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't believe that the second part of your question, that's going to change. The range has been estimated from the industry. It's going to be anywhere from 20 to 40 cents per container. Now, the initial idea was that whether you purchase a 5-gallon container or a quart, that price would remain the same for that. The encouraging you to purchase the appropriate amount, obviously. So paint contractors like this because that helps them actually save some money with this program, because they will now have the ability to return their paint if they have leftover paint at any site that's a collection site, and they don't have to necessarily register themselves as a very small quantity, entity, and that whether they have a fee involved with that. Now, the first part of your question was whether or not they're going to still have those programs. Yes, we'll still have the programs. That's why we're choosing Minnesota. We have an excellent program on collection of paint right now through our counties. That infrastructure is what's needed to actually try to utilize this the infrastructure to implement the program. So we're still going to use the counties to collect it. You can use that, but the cost of transporting it and those things, those bills are not going to be borne by the counties. This paint organization will cover those costs. Right, so they're going to alleviate those costs. There'll be still some costs within the county because they're going to have to collect it initially. But the other idea is also to expand the program so that retailers would also be involved. And in retailers like Hirschfields and others have indicated that they are going to be a collection site for the paint.
Further discussion on Senate File 477, Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, Senator Dahl and I discussed this bill prior to the session beginning today, and I asked him if there were any organizations opposing this bill, and he was not able to identify any. And perhaps there's somebody here that knows of some organization that is officially opposing this, and if they do know of it, I'd like to have them speak up about it. But I know Senator Dahl mentioned a number of organizations, maybe half a dozen or so, that do support this legislation. And Senator Dahl, if you could just refresh my memory and refresh the memory of the body here and relist those organizations that support your bill, that might be helpful to us when we make a decision whether we should support it or not.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, thank you very much for that. Those that are in support of this, again, we have the National Paint and Coatings Association, we have the Minnesota Retailers Association, the manufacturers of paint in this state are all in favor of this bill. The Amazon Environmental, which is the organization that does a lot of the recycling, is in favor of this bill. Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association is in favor of this bill. Minnesota Paint Council is in favor of this bill. The Association of Minnesota Counties is in favor of this bill. So we have a large collection of groups and organizations and folks that are in support of this. They think it's a great idea. I like the idea of bringing, again, that we bring all the parties that are benefiting from a product that's put into our waste stream or are participating in how we deal with collecting it and disposing of it and the costs involved with that. And they've developed this program up to this point. The most of that has been developed by the private industry.
Further discussion on Senate File 477. Seeing none, Senator Dahl renews his motion that this committee do arise. Senate File 477 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next bill on general orders is number 74. House File 486, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 486 be recommended to pass.
Senator Olsen, description of your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is two turnbacks of state roads. One is in Cass County. It's Legislative Route 290. Goes to a state hospital, no longer being used, so that is being turned back to Cass County. The other one is in Isanti County in the city of Cambridge. It's Legislative Route 293, no longer serving a state hospital, so that's being turned back to the city. So it's a pretty simple bill. I ask for your support.
Any further discussion on House File 486? Seeing none, Senator Olsen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, House File 486, we recommend it to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next bill on general orders, number 82, Senate File 1172, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1172 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill.
Members, this comes from an agency bill. It's Minnesota Office of Management and Budget, and we're reducing some duplication here. It states that it allows that state employees that have commercial driver license, CDLs, that are fall under federal compliance do not also need to be tested under state DATWA laws. And so I appreciate your support. There was no opposition for this bill in committee.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Koch renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1172 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill be number 133, Senate File 1754, Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1754 be recommended to pass.
Senator Kubley, discussion on your bill.
Well, members, this is a fairly simple bill as well. It would make it clear that a corporation formed for religious purposes or a church plan can serve as a corporate trustee. At the time that the ELCA was formed back in 1988 as a compromise, that produced a pretty complicated corporate structure. The trustees of the Board of Pensions serve as both directors of the Board of Pensions, a Minnesota nonprofit corporation, and also serve as trustees of the nine benefit trusts that hold the accumulations and other benefit reserves for these pension plans that are maintained by the board. And so the trustees are essentially wearing a number of hats. But this bill had no opponents in judiciary, and I'd recommend your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1754. Seeing none, Senator Kubley renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1754 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 89 on general orders, Senate File 1566, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1566 be recommended to pass.
Senator Berglund, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a department bill. It has a number of technical corrections in it and things that are needed to conform with federal law. I'll go through just the ones that are not really technical. There is a provision in here that requires third-party payers to cooperate with DHS by furnishing information in order to help establish third-party liability as required by federal law. It clarifies that an annual gift of $2,000 or less made by a tax-exempt organization to or for the benefit of children 18 years of age or under with life-threatening illnesses are disregarded from income when determining medical assistance eligibility. Clarifies that the assets designated as burial expense are excluded when determining MA eligibility to the same extent that they are exempted by Social Security income supplemental programs. Reinstates the nine-member drug utilization review board. This board has been in place for the last 10 years. It still is continuing, but inadvertently it was repealed in last year's Omnibus Health and Human Services bill. Allows the commissioner to develop centers of excellence when providing services for complex medical procedures with a high degree of variation in outcomes. clarifies that the contracts between the Commissioner of Human Services and the health plans are exempted from the state's set-aside and preference in employment provisions of law. It also eliminates the $3,000 per family out-of-pocket minimum for the inpatient services for adult enrollees. The maximum for each adult is $1,000, and there can be no more than two adults in a family. This is to comply with our latest federal waiver. It eliminates the guideline range for Minnesota Care premiums for those from 275% of poverty to 300% of poverty. We have no one that is in that category, so having premium ranges for that group doesn't make sense. It establishes the court venue of action to enforce an MA lien or claim against real property when there is a transfer on a death deed. It accelerates the effective dates for the 2005 special session law, where effective dates were contingent on health match implementation, and health match has been discontinued. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on Senate File 1566. Seeing none, Senator Berglund renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1566 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders will be number 122 on general orders, Senate File 501, Senator Lynch. Do you have a motion to make? Is it on your desk there? When this committee do arise, that's your. Oh, your microphone. Take Mr. Foley's, Senator Foley's.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 501 be recommended to pass.
Senator Lynch, tell the committee what it's about.
Mr. Chair, this is a fairly simple piece of legislation, and it modifies the statute related to disabled children's services. And it specifically addresses the definition of related condition to include fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And the fact is that there are over 8,000 Minnesota babies born each year with brain damage caused by prenatal alcohol exposure. And this is a condition that is absolutely 100% preventable, but absolutely not curable. And what we are seeking to do is to clarify that children with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder are eligible for services provided that they meet other eligibility requirements. And let me be clear that this bill will not automatically qualify individuals for services, but it will go a long ways in helping to raise awareness and getting help to those babies and those families that need these services.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate File 501? Seeing none, Senator Lynch renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 501 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill is number 148 on general orders, Senate File 806, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 806 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl on the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill makes a small attempt to put some regulation into consumer short-term lending. This is a shell of its former self, but it is a bill that ultimately was even approved by the payday lenders themselves with little or no controversy in the end. Very quickly, what the bill does is specifies that a payday lender and borrower must have a written contract and does specify what that contract should or should not include. It also provides that consumer short-term lenders must not engage in the prohibited debt collection practices that are specified that debt collectors have to follow. Payday lenders would also have to follow those same types of rules. It also requires a consumer short-term lender to file an annual report with the Commissioner of Commerce that contains information as specified, and it also makes clear that Minnesota does have jurisdiction over internet payday lenders. So, again, members, this bill, we did get all the stakeholders to agree on the provisions of this bill, that some regulation on payday loans is needed, and this is the first step. I ask for your support. I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion on Senate File 806? Seeing none, Senator Dahl renews his motion that when this committee to arise, Senate File 806 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The last bill on general orders this afternoon be number 143 on general orders, which is Senate File 1323, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1372 be recommended to pass.
Senator Sharon, describe the bill, please.
Before, if it's appropriate, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment that I'd like to introduce to the bill before discussing the bill.
That's fine.
It is the A1 amendment.
We'll report the Sharon A1 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves to amend Senate File Number 1323 as follows. Page 1, line 17, after the period insert, a purchaser may decline to accept the Sharps disposal container. This is the A1 amendment.
Tell the committee what the amendment does.
The amendment simply adds language to the bill that indicates, in relationship to the bill, a simple statement that a purchaser of the Sharps, the subject for which the bill is written, is not required to accept a disposal container that is in the bill.
Okay, on the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Sharon.
On the bill itself, Mr. Chair, this bill amends Minnesota statutes of 2008, modifying the Infection Waste Control Act. This amended act will require manufacturers of Sharps to provide Sharp retailers, at no cost to the retailer, a Sharps disposal container. And the retailer must offer this disposal container to a person who purchases 90 or more syringes. Nothing in this bill requires the purchaser to accept the container, and they can decline to accept the disposal container. The problem is that there are over 2.4 billion syringes and pen needles sold by pharmacies every year. In Minnesota, it's estimated that 30 million syringes and pen needles are sold by pharmacies every year. And other than those that are in the medical waste stream, most of those Sharps are going into the landfills. Manufacturers of insulin syringes and pen needles favor this legislation and are willing to provide the disposable Sharps containers to address the issue of the growing needle stick problem. And the EPA has indicated in its 2004 guidelines that there should be methods created in the states for reducing accidental needle sticks, particularly sticks that are perpetuated on our sanitary waste workers and landfill operators. The manufacturers, along with the Product Stewardship Institute, which is a nonprofit organization that closely watches these issues and the implementation of the guidelines of EPA, support this effort to increase safe disposal by requiring those who make money manufacturing or distributing hazardous products share the cost of disposal. This bill is not a final solution, but it will be a start on reducing as much as 90% of the exposures to communicable diseases and other infections as a result of offering these free containers. Other states in Canada have already demonstrated that there's substantial reductions as a result of this in accidental needle sticks. And that is a summary of the bill.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate File 1323? Seeing none, Senator Sharon renews her motion. When this committee to arise, Senate File 1323 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller, list.
Mr. Chairman, there's a second list. List 2 starts with number 32640, a Kelash bill. And on that list, delete number 90, Senate File 916, that's a Dibble bill. And Senator Scheid, you don't want to take that delete? Okay, and then take the Scheid, number 68, Senate File 1004, take that off. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bills. Senator Resk says that Senate File 1464 should be added. Senate File 1464.
Okay, the next bill.
So I designate those, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. List number 2 is number 32 on general orders, Senate File 640, Senator Kelash.
Mr. Chair, when this committee do arise, I recommend the passage of Senate File 640. It kind of caught me by surprise.
You recommend it to pass. That's all right. Would you describe the bill to the body?
This bill allows temporary drawdown on lakes that are currently being done. The current system requires a 100% approval by the landowners around that lake before that lake can be drawn down. That limits and cancels out a lot of the hard work that watershed districts, DNR, et cetera, have been doing to prepare to eliminate the invasive species on that lake. This just allows it to be a majority on that.
Any further discussion on Senate File 640? Seeing none, Senator Kelash renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 640 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill is number 56, Senate File 1147. Senator Higgins.
Thanks for the 2-minute notice, Mr. Chair.
Blame it on majority.
Then when this committee do arise, Senate File 1147 be recommended to pass.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1147 is a bill that addresses several properly related issues, especially related to foreclosed homes and the foreclosure notice. During our hearing in the Judiciary Committee, Sergeant Rich Jackson from Minneapolis PD Problem Properties Unit testified about how foreclosed and abandoned homes often turn into drug havens, prostitution, hangouts, gang houses. And as you all know from all of the things I've been talking about for years and years, they become very susceptible to copper theft. Specifically, the bill allows the holder of the mortgage or sheriff's certificate to protect vacant or unoccupied premises from trespass until they receive notice that the premises are occupied. For abandoned properties, they're required to make periodic inspections and install or change locks on windows and doors. For abandoned properties, they may board the windows, doors, and other openings, install and operate alarm systems, and take any other measures necessary to prevent damage. We added language that would provide notice of requirements, an opportunity to request a hearing, and the duty to protect the abandoned premises, as well as some timelines for complying, requesting a hearing, notice of costs incurred, and all those kinds of things. We corrected an inadvertent admission from a tenant notice bill that we did last year. We had been hearing from people, and other senators have noticed, that tenants weren't receiving adequate notice and wondered why, because we thought we'd pass the bill. Well, we made changes to Chapter 580, but not Chapter 581, which is foreclosure by action. So after talking with the Hennepin County's Sheriff's Office and finding out what the problem was, we are fixing those references here in this bill. We add municipalities to the parties who are allowed to initiate the process for a 5-week redemption period. We include some language concerning trespassing on construction sites. The language in statute's kind of overly technical and has kind of weird restrictions. And current law also says that there must be notices on the building, but a lot of construction sites don't have a building. So we made accommodations for that. And finally, the bill makes changes to the nuisance property statute. The increased number of foreclosed and vacant properties has led to a dramatic increase in the number of problems and nuisance activities in these properties. And we do a little amending of the definition of owner and occupant for the buildings. We also deal with the illegal parties where alcohol is sold for profit, and it becomes a one strike in the nuisance conditions. Ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Higgins renews her motion that Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Higgins yield?
She will yield, Senator.
Thank you. Senator Higgins, you're doing something with contract for deeds. Is that, could you explain that briefly, please?
Senator Higgins. The question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, can you give me a reference in the bill? I don't think I have anything to do with contract for deeds in this bill.
It was just in the title says, in contract for deed cancellations, clarification.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, are you looking in the first engrossment? Because I don't see that.
Mr. President, I'm reading it off the board up there. It's section 3.
Oh, that.
That one. That one. Senator Higgins.
Section 3 is, you may or may not have been paying attention when I was mumbling about the references to Chapter 580 and 581. One is foreclosure by notice. The other is foreclosure by action. Last year when we made notices, made changes to the notice provisions to the tenants, we put them all in Chapter 580. Which is foreclosure by notice, but we forgot to change them in 581, and Section 3 just merely adds 581 to the notice provisions, and I guess on line 2.23 there's a reference to a contract for deed cancellation, so that's what that is.
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, Senator Higgins, The reference on 327 to this section is effective June 1st, 2009 and applies to cancellation of contracts for deed or mortgages foreclosed commenced on or after that date. Is that just relating to the limitation on lease and notices to tenants?
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, the only change that we make in that section is adding Chapter 581 to the other two chapters, 580 and 582, and that's the foreclosure by by action. So
could you just tell us,
Senator
Vandeveer, what that does in a practical sense?
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandeveer, last year, we made changes so that the tenants are protected during the foreclosure process. I believe this section, I'd have to go back and look to see what we did to this section, but if I remember correctly, we allowed the tenants to withhold any or all of the last month's rent. With the fairly certain idea that a lot of the tenants were not going to get their damaged deposits or whatever deposits they made, and so you'll see on line 3.17. I think that sentence is the piece that we put in last year. The withholding all or any portion of rent for the last payment period creates a rebuttable presumption that the tenant withheld the last payment on the grounds that the deposit would serve as the payment for the last period. So I think that was the change we made last year. And now this year all we're doing is making sure that that is effective for foreclosure by action as well as foreclosure by notice.
Further discussion on Senate File 1147. Seeing none, Senator Higgins renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1147 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill, General Orders Number 93, Senate File 1884, Senator Dahl.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1884 be recommended to pass, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl, on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was brought forward by the licensed daycare providers. A couple years ago, we provided some legislation that provided for more safety for our kids in child care centers. And but there was an unintended consequence of that was part of this was a notification process that if an incident occurred that required you know, the doctor to look at an incident, and an investigation is triggered by DHS to determine whether there was neglect or abuse or if it was simply a singular incident accident. And at the end of that investigation, there could be a variance or a set aside that was given to that person so that they can continue to work in the daycare center. The problem was is that even with that set aside or variance, the daycare center would have to notify any potential consumers that would be looking at that daycare center for the next 7 years that this incident occurred, even though a set aside was put in place. What that effectively did is mean that that person was going to be fired or no longer be able to work in the industry because no one else would want to hire them, given that they'd have to notify everyone for the next 7 years. So what we've done is in this legislation is asked that we, and DHS has worked with us on this language, that upon the set-aside being issued, that we would notify all of the currently enrolled parents of that daycare center that what the results were and that they would have met their obligations under the law.
Okay, any the bill does. Further discussion on Senate File 1884? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And would the senator yield a question for question?
You yield to a question, yes.
Can you get a little more into detail for me, Senator Dahl, what the Department of Human Services investigation entails? With regards to this?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, while I'm not, doing all the details of their investigations, what they do is that if an incident occurs, if someone trips and falls, or if they are, in one instance they were told that the example that was given is that some bowl of peas was heated up and given to a child, and they're supposed to have stirred it up, but they didn't appropriately do that. Some of that, the water that was on there got into the hand of the child and created a little bit of a red mark, or I guess would be a burn of some sort, that required them to go to a doctor, okay, to have it looked at. The doctor in this particular incident put a salve on it, but what that does is because they go to see a doctor, then there's going to be an investigation. DHS gets a report, goes to DHS, then they investigate that individual as to what happened. They look at all the mitigating circumstances to determine, was there neglect, was there an abusive situation, or was this simply something where someone made an error in judgment at that point. This is only good for one incident. If there's a second incident, this does not apply. But if there's a single incident and there was a set aside or a variance was called for on that incident, then the notification only has to happen at the time the set-aside is issued. Does that answer your question?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. President and Senator Dahl. Yes, I think it does. If there is enough negligent behavior, then obviously, according to the bill, there is no. You do not grant a set aside. Is that correct? And if that's the case, how does it get reinstated after that?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, this does not change anything with the existing law in terms of the investigation or their procedures to go forward to determine whether a set-aside is appropriate. All it does is change what the notification procedure would be upon a set-aside being issued and a variance, that they no longer have to notify for the next 7 years anyone who comes up to their door, just the one time for the people who are currently enrolled at that particular facility. And what was happening up to this point with the way the law is, if you have to notify everyone who is a potential customer of that facility for the next 7 years, you're no longer going to employ that person, whether they're really good at their job or not, if something happened and they were given that set aside. And you won't be able to be employed someplace else either, because you'd have to notify them that you have this set aside. So it effectively eliminated them from a career in child care, whether they were good at their job or not. So this allows them to have one exception if a minor incident occurred and they were issued a set aside. Again, does not change any of the investigative procedures or what DHS is doing. It's only on the notification upon the issuing of a set aside.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate File 1884? Seeing none, Senator Dahl renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1884 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders be number 96 on general orders, Senate File 1189, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1189 be recommended to pass.
Senator Sharon, discussion on your bill.
This bill requires public school districts and charter schools to annually provide licensed custodial engineers with at least 8 hours of training related to boiler operations during the licensee's normal working hours, including at least 2 hours in the boiler room with hands-on training. The training must be provided by a licensed first class or chief engineer who is employed by the district, who would receive training credit for this service. The bill is supported by SEIU, which sees this bill as a way to improve the school's on-site maintenance capabilities, save money for the school districts while providing proper training opportunities for employees, creating more safety in the school districts.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1189? Seeing Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Michelle.
Thank you. Senator Sharon, did the school boards have a position on this bill? I recall a lot of testimony actually in committee and some back and forth regarding whether or not this is a mandate and what they can do during these kind of economic times.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Michelle. The representative for the school boards was concerned about whether or not this, as a mandate, would create costs for the school. And as an overall policy, the school boards, as you know, would be opposing anything that would create a new cost, particularly in these times when they're already dealing with a number of cost reductions. But what I think is important for this body, and of course we made these arguments during the session, is that what is happening is that because these operators do not have hands-on experience or mentoring, they are missing, without this kind of direct, so often I call it a clinical direct experience, their oversight of the boilers is deficient, and the state is recognizing and coming and doing an inspections and finding these deficiencies. These deficiencies are like small leaks in the streams of hot water that reduce the efficiency of the system. Boiler controls are not tested regularly. The boiler water chemistry is not being monitored correctly. Documentation of boiler pressures and temperatures are not being interpreted properly. And what this means, as an example, to assure that those who are on the representing the schools and their concerns about costs. Just one example. Based on the current cost of natural gas, if only 10% of steam boilers, of which there are 1,694 in the state, developed a 1/8-inch stream leak, which is about the size of a lead pencil, this amounts to a cost of $66,924 loss a year. So this proposal certainly makes up in terms of cost savings for anything that has to occur in the schools, which is simply to take their first-class operators to be able to spend 8 hours a year with a lower-class licensed boiler operator to make certain that they know how to operate the boilers in that school system.
All right. Senator Sheeran, any further discussion? Senator Sheeran renews her motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 1189 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on the orders is number 147, Senate File 1503, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1503 be recommended to pass.
Senator Torres Ray, a description of the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 1503 is a technical bill related to child
welfare. Is your microphone working?
I have to move this way. Thank you, Mr. President.
That's better, yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senate File 1503 is a technical bill relating to child welfare and placement of children. Article 1 in this bill includes technical modifications to the child welfare provisions to make the child welfare placement decisions in compliance with federal regulations. Article 2 is related to child welfare policy. Section 1 amends the data practices chapter of law to allow child support data of the parents and the child to be disclosed to agencies administering programs under Title 4E, Title 4B, as provided by federal law. Section 2 amends the American Indian Child Welfare Projects to allow tribes participating in the projects under this session to conduct children's mental health screenings for children who meet this criteria. This section also allows participating tribes to establish a local child welfare mortality review panel. Section 3 clarifies the requirements to search for in the father registry before an adoption petition can be granted, and this does not apply to an agency proceeding under the Safe Place for Newborn Act, for Newborns Act. Section 4 extends the limitation of asserting an interest in a child when a putative father does not register with the father's adoption registry. This is a long bill, Mr. President and members. Section 5 makes several modifications to the statute that imposes the duty to ensure placement prevention and family reunification. This section provides that reasonable efforts to prevent placement of children must include the agency working with the family to develop and implement a safety plan, placement of siblings, and for siblings who are not in the same home to establish visitation. And all of these should be consistent to the best interest of the child statute under the Child Protection Act. Section 6 modifies the definition of foster care to make the definition consistent with the other chapters of law and clarifies that foster care may not be used as a punishment or a consequence for the child's behavior. Section 7 amends the juvenile treatment screening team section of law to allow the team to consider residential treatment to meet the child's needs consistent with the changes made in Section 5. Section 8, 9, and 21 ensure that foster care is intended to provide for the child's safety and for the safety of others. It also provides access to treatment and not as a punishment, and strikes the court's ability to place the child in a group foster care facility under the Commissioner of Correction. Section 10 modifies the definition of parent under the Child Protection Chapter of Law. Section 11 establishes the process to ensure diligent efforts to identify, locate, and notify both parents of the child. Section 12, 13, 14, and 15 relate to the court procedures to issue a notice when filing a petition for termination of parental rights or permanent placement. Sections 16 and 30 allow a court to authorize parties and participants to participate in alternative dispute resolution to resolve cases of permanency or cases of with termination of parental rights petitions or any other case appropriate in the best interest of the child. Section 17 allows a police officer to take a child into immediate custody when a child has run away from home. Section 18 allows the social services agency, when a child has been taken into custody, to release the child after the agency has conducted an assessment and has developed and implemented a safety plan with the family. Section 19 amends the section of law relating to a hearing and release requirement by striking the reference to runaway as a reason to maintain a child in custody, and requires the court to inquire subsequent hearings of the agency reasonable efforts to place siblings together. Section 20 and 22 modify provisions related to visitation when a child is taken into custody and the court determines that the child should continue in foster care. Sections 23 and 227 make changes to comply with federal law. They are purely technical, and I can go into that if any members have questions related to these technical modifications. Section 23 requires that the out-of-home placement plan include efforts to ensure the child's educational stability while the child is placed in foster care. Section 24 provides that siblings should be placed together unless it is documented that it should be to the contrary, to protect the safety of the children. Section 25 requires that the monthly caseworker visits include sufficient substance and duration to address certain issues, including the child's school attendance, which is required by law. Section 26 modifies the relative search section by law by requiring that the responsible social services agency to exercise due diligence to identify and notify adult relatives prior to the placement or within 30 days after the child is removed from the parent's home. Section 27 amends the administrative or court review of placement by adding the paragraph related to a child age 17 or older who is aging out of foster care. And finally, sections 28 and 29 clarify the voluntary foster care placement for treatment, which must be determined if medically necessary. Members, this is a very long bill, but it's mainly a technical bill that puts the state in compliance with federal regulations.
I'm going to say Senator Limmer, discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Torres-Ray, there was an addition made to your bill when it passed through judiciary. It was similar, if not exactly, the bill that Senator Rest had first passed, one of the first of two bills regarding gaining medical records and of people who may be adopted children, but they didn't know who their parents were. During that discussion, I had amended, and Senator Rest had accepted the amendments restricting the identity of mothers or parents, but mostly mothers, prior to 1977, that their identities would be strictly not identified. Is that in this bill?
Mr.
Senator
President,
Torres Ray.
Senator Limmer, it is. And thank you for alluding that to this. I was going to ask Senator Rest to be available to respond to questions related to that provision that was included.
And Senator Torres Ray, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure, since the judiciary hearing, has there been any alteration to that language to now?
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, no, it has not. The version that was passed in committee is the version that is before you today, okay, that is available to you in the computer.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Ray, in the event that this is passed and it happens to go to a conference committee, if there's effort there to further open the identity of mothers prior to 1977, what would your reaction be to in conference committee if it took that extra step?
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. President and Senator Limmer, the department is very careful about, has been very protective of this bill because we have several provisions that put the state in compliance with the federal government. It is my intent to protect the integrity of this bill to the very end, because if Minnesota is not in compliance, we're going to lose money. And so as far as my commitment to you and to members, this bill will stay in the shape that it is today until the end. In conference committee, as you know, sometimes, you know, the House bring items that are out of our control. But as if you're asking me, I'm letting you know that I intend to protect the language of the bill as you see it today through the entire process.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. I just wanted to thank you for that commitment. I know that the administration is concerned about keeping the identity of birth parents if an agreement had been made in the past prior to 77. I don't know exactly where they would end up. I can't speak for them, but I know they're very concerned about the issue, as are a number of senators on the floor, and I think this is perhaps a good next step to make as far as gaining medical information for those who need it without breaking the word to certain people that were hoping that their identities would be kept and remain private. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, but I'm not. Do you have it at the desk? I don't. It's on its way up. So can we temporarily progress this until the amendment comes, please?
I will temporarily progress.
Thank you, Mr.
Pardon?
President. That's okay.
Why don't wait a second, Senator Higgins? It's being copied as we speak here, and I think you can explain it. Could you explain the amendment,
Mr.?
We're going to move on. You can explain your amendment.
Mr. President, can I just announce something before we go any further?
Yeah.
Members, so after this bill, then we're going to do Senator Clark's, number 92, then Senator Rest, number 100, which is Senate File 1464, and then I'd like to add Senate File, or House File 334, which is number 146, and then we'll be done for the evening. Number 146, Scheid Bill, House File 334. Thank you, Mr. President.
Be about a minute, Senator Higgins. Did you want to explain it, or you haven't seen your own amendment? Okay, we'll go to the next one, Senator Torres Ray. We're going to progress your bill for.
Thank
a moment.
You, Mr. President.
Senator Clark, General Orders Number 92, Senate File 1569. Senator Clark.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 1569 be recommended to pass.
Senator Clark, discuss your bill, would you please?
Mr. Chair and members, this is one of the bills that we are trying to put forward, thinking about how we can modernize, reform, look at doing things in better ways and newer ways. The bill originally set out to merge the workforce centers in with our technical colleges and MNSCU and move adult basic ed in with them. Now, we may still get there at some point, but my real hope, members, was that we could bring the partners to the table to really look at how we're doing adult learning, training, and education. Someone who is trying to get basic skills in a job shouldn't have to figure out where it is that they get some basic skills, where it is they go to get a job, or maybe get some additional training. And so for the work that our business, industry, and jobs committees, our economic development committees, and our education committees, this now tries to go ahead and help us move further along a continuum. So what it does, members, is that you will see that there are a set of goals that relate to employment, training, and education. It identifies that we would have at least 4 local collaborations that would look at these goals and think of better ways to be meeting them, and then coming back to us with a report and a plan about how they're going to get there. And then, frankly, within 2 years, they're going to come back and make recommendations about system redesign, about statutory changes, and about financial needs. We have the support of all of the different stakeholders on this, and hopefully we can use this as the kind of mechanism to start making significant changes, but in a way where partners can come to the table to do it.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1569, Senator Pearsall?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to ask Senator Clark a question about, is it your intention with this to force the Minsky system tech colleges into certain kinds of curricula or fields or certain, because they're, a lot of them are having some specialties that they're trying to develop and perfect today?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pearsall, very good question. No, this would not force it. Actually, what my hope is, and the hope of the people that have been working on this, in St. Cloud we actually now have the Workforce Center co-located with our technical college, and they found that there's some really good ways that they can help enhance each other. For example, with customized training for businesses, shorter-term certifications, things like for them, they're trying to do more in the area of health, which is certainly a big issue around the state. So from a local standpoint, the hope would be in the long run that our higher ed institutions may have a better relationship and sense of where the emerging needs of the business community are, but also be better helping in a more seamless way the potential employees, the workers. So, you know, whether we're thinking about people who are newer to this country, seniors who want to be retrained, situations that you're talking about where there's some specialization, I think that we have a lot of possibilities and opportunities of doing a better job in the long run with this.
Okay. Any further discussion on Senate File 1569? Seeing none, Senator Clark renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1569 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 100 on general orders, Senate File 1464, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1464 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1464 is a proposal that allows state employees to use facilities, empty rooms in state buildings for wellness activities, and releases the state from liability when that is allowed according to the agency that has control over that space.
Okay, discussion on Senate File 1464. Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1464 be recommended to pass. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The last bill on list two is number 146 on general orders, House File 334, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move when this committee do arise, House File 334 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid, discussion on the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I want to point out to members that on the shelf by your feet under your desk,
you'll see the unofficial engrossments. The first one in the folder is this bill. And I believe it's a 49-page bill, but it's largely made up of forms. And this bill does three major things. It has to do with garnishment. So it provides, well, I want to tell you that there is no known opposition, that the Bankers Association, the Minnesota Association of Collectors, and Legal Aid have worked on the language in this bill. And so the people who work with it every day think this is a good idea. What it does is provide a second notice after they serve the summons and complaint on the debtor. They provide a second notice prior to seizure of funds from a bank account. They're trying to get debtors and creditors to communicate with each other and for debtors to understand their rights. So that's the purpose of the second notice. It streamlines the process because you may or may not know that some of a person's income may be exempt from garnishment. And on page 9 of the bill, it shows you that lists what kind of money is protected. And it has to do with MFIP, GA, or General Assistance, Medical Assistance, GAMC, Supplemental Aid, Minnesota Care, Energy and Fuel Assistance. All of those things are exempt from garnishment. And if you look inside the bill at all, you'll see that the forms have been written in as plain language as is possible. And what I was going to say was that the process is streamlined because if a person says, well, this income is exempt, you may not garnish this, then the creditor can object to that exemption and then just request a court hearing. As I said, this is going to get debtors and creditors to talk to each other. It's going to be more sure that we're going to be better able to determine what funds are exempt, and therefore they are not seized in a garnishment. It's going to prompt debtors to send adequate proof of their exemption because it's going to tell them what they have to send to do that, and it should reduce the debtor's confusion about the garnishment process. So I think it's an improvement, and I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the senator yield for a question?
She will yield.
Just a question here with regards to sheriff's levies and funds. Is there a big change going on there, and were they worked with on this, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, what it does in here about the sheriff's levy, is it deletes the current form and then creates three separate forms because we're now going to have the first summons and complaint, then the second notice, and using plainer language. So no, it does not change the function here of the sheriff.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Just to follow up on that, so there's not going to be an additional amount of fees then that are going to be charged.
Senator Scheid, are there going to be additional fees? Is that the question? Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, no. No.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate House File 334? Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 334 be recommended to pass. Without objection, we're going to go back to number 147 on general orders, which is Senate File 1503, Senator Torres Ray. And I believe we left off where Senator Higgins has an amendment. The Secretary will report.
The A3 amendment.
The Higgins A3 amendment. Senator Higgins.
Senator Higgins moves to amend Senate File 1503 as follows. Page 57, after line 16, insert. This is the A3 amendment.
Senator Higgins, tell us what the amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an agreement that's been worked out with the department and the Fathers and Family Network, and it deals with putative fathers who have registered the
on the father's adoption registry. It says that they're entitled to notice of the adoption of the child. It also permits the responsible social service agency to contact the father who's on the registry. And it permits the child to be placed with him if he's the biological father. In turn, this permits the agency to access the child's biological father for the day-to-day care of the child in lieu of foster care, and expands the pool of relatives to be considered if neither parent can care for the child. In the amendment in Article 2, it clarifies that both parents have the right to hearing on the visitation plan developed by the parents and the agency when the parent disagrees with the plan, and it changes the court authority to delay developing a visitation plan for a non-resident parent who has little or no contact with the child from mandatory to discretionary. And the new section provides that both parents of the child are parties to juvenile protection cases. Other changes make the role of the grandparents and other relatives consistent with current juvenile protection court rules.
Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Higgins. I don't believe that this language was introduced as a bill. I'm a little bit concerned about adopting it on the floor. It may have been worked out, you know, with the department, but I can recall, I believe Senator Berglund spent quite a bit of time working on this putative, this adoption registry years ago because of some problems that came about where a child had been conceived and then born, and then years later the father showed up and was objecting to adoption of the child or placement of the child. And so I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. I'm quite uncomfortable, to be honest with you, of just adopting something like this on the floor of the Senate without having had it go through the committee process and had a bitter vetting with it. It might be right. It might be the right thing to do. But I don't know that I'm willing to just accept the fact that the department says it's A-OK and leave the legislative out of the process. So I'm having problems with this amendment, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins.
Horace Ray, do you have? Senator Ress.
Thank you, Senator Cross. Mr. President, Senator Betzel, I agree with this amendment, and I think what is included in here is language that is appropriate, and I support it. I do, however, understand Senator Betzel's hesitation, and I think it's going to be up to the members to really make a decision. Unfortunately, I know that many people work on this. They approached DHS and had extensive conversations about this issue, so that I know a lot of work went into this. Unfortunately, of course, the deadlines prevented this group from bringing this on time to our policy committee, so it did not get a hearing. That is the reason it is not in a form of an individual bill, but I do support this amendment. I think this is an important provision, and I would like to ask for member support.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President and Senator Osorio, let's have a discussion about it. How long has this organization known about this issue? When did it come to their attention? Why wasn't it introduced as a bill?
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. President and members, I think that's a legitimate question, and I think that it's a question that I really don't have a clear argument for. I think it could be done again, but I offer this as an alternative, and I think Senator Higgins was approached by several members who feel very strongly that this needs to be part of this bill now.
Mr. Chair.
Senator. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw.
Okay. Senator,
thank you, Senator Higgins.
Senator Torres Ray renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1503 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, that, I believe, concludes, Mr. Majority Leader, the general orders.
Mr.
Get a rise and report.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Reports of committees.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Taxes, to which was referred Senate File Number 2074, a bill for an act relating to taxation, income, and corporate franchise, providing a federal update, etc., reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Pogermiller, you wish to...
Mr. President, I move that the report just read by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Second reading of Senate bill, Senate file 2074. Second reading. Okay, without objection, Senator Bonhoff, Senator Anderson, Senator Gimsey will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Pappas from 4:30 to the end. Senator Bach from 4:40 to 5:30. And Senator Erickson Ropes from 6 o'clock to the end. Any announcements of Senate interest? Senator Pogermiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the plan is to... Does anybody have any meetings in the morning? Could we start at 9:30? What? Senator Senjum, why don't we come in at 9:30 and then caucus, and we have two bills that we're going to process tomorrow, the transportation bill and the environment bill, and just kind of looking at your eyes, any interest in taking up the tax bill tomorrow?
President, Senator Senjum.
Majority Leader, we have a lot of material on the tax bill, but we want to get even more, so we'd prefer that be wait.
Okay, and so the tax bill will take up Friday, I think, at this stage. And we are still not sure yet about the human service bill, still waiting for fiscal notes there. But there's a likelihood we will meet Saturday still. So...
Okay, Senator.
So I would move, Mr. President, that the Senate adjourn till Thursday, April 23rd, 9:30 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn till tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.